Hey, how's it going? My name's Will. I don't work at a used record store. I don't own an iguana, although I'm sure they make great pets. I don't have dreadlocks or play the acoustic guitar. I can remember quite well, thank you, and no, I don't constantly have the munchies. When 4:20 comes around, I've still got 40 minutes of work left. I've never hit a girl on a bike with my car or shot my friend with a shotgun. I've never had to apologize for letting a girl I was watching drown in a pool while I was getting high because duh, I wouldn't be getting high if I was around children. I'm a regular guy who works regular jobs, just like the majority of all Americans who use marijuana occasionally and responsibly. My name is Will, and I'm normal.
And distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular audio podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, normalaudiostash.com. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. Welcome back to the Audio Stash. Today it is Monday, June 25th. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal right now to end marijuana prohibition in America. We can do it. Just visit norml.org to get involved today. We've got a lot to cover here in the Audio Stash today. The Supreme Court issued their ruling in the Bong Hits for Jesus case, ruling for the school district 5-4. We're going to speak with Chris Crane from Students for Sensible Drug Policy about why that really means that high school students should be more empowered to speak about prohibition and drug policy in general within their school environments. Again, Chris Crane will be here on the program today. Also, we'll speak with Alan St. Pierre, Normal's Executive Director, about the Bong Hits for Jesus ruling that was issued today. We have links to read the full opinions on this on our website at normalaudiostash.com. We'll also speak with Alan about his travels to London last week. And in the Audio Stash later this week, speaking of European travels, we're going to speak with Normal Advisory Board member and PBS travel host and really top podcaster, Rick Steves. Rick is a great friend of the Normal Foundation. We interviewed him here last year. He'll be at the Normal Conference in October of this year, delivering one of the keynote speeches. And Rick offered a wonderful interview with us last week. We'll air that here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash this week. Rick Steves, of course, a fierce advocate of ending marijuana prohibition here in this country. So we have a lot to cover here today on Normal's Daily Audio Stash. Also, I have some music for you today. Stay tuned. First up on the Audio Stash today, we're going to cover a variety of topics here with Normal's Executive Director, Alan St. Pierre. Alan, welcome back to the Audio Stash today.
Good day, Chris.
Alan, thanks again for joining us here today. We're going to cover a few topics here. Let's start with the Supreme Court ruling on the Bong Hits for Jesus banner case today. Again, listeners can read the full Supreme Court opinions through a link we have at normalaudiostash.com. Alan, you know, what did you take away from this ruling?
In some respects, it's not too big of a surprise. I think a lot of us who looked at it thought it might, the Supreme Court might rule in favor of the state and the school district simply because the event was a sanctioned school event, and the principal, in her capacity, thought that the sign was disruptive and therefore could take it down and ultimately suspend the student. But what this decision says today from Judge Roberts so clearly is that in the realm of drugs, students have today lost their First Amendment rights in school. That is what I got from this decision today, and I think that Justice Stevens was correct in pointing out that in a state like Alaska, where marijuana has been a viable political issue for years, in fact, the last 3 years, there's been initiatives and a statewide vote on marijuana. And so if you're a student today, 16, 17, 18 years old, and considering that the DARE program is in half of the public schools in the United States, that students are the target of the largest propaganda campaign in human history called the Partnership for Drug-Free America, students are to be targeted 30 to 40 times a week for an impression from the government, essentially telling them something bad or negative about drugs in general. Of course, what we're speaking about here are controlled substances in Schedule 1. One of the things that I am confused by this particular ruling is what if the students put up a sign that says something to the effect of students for bud, or some sort of something that's positive about alcohol, or something positive about pharmaceutical drugs, or positive about tobacco. What about a sign that said something like, puffing cigarettes for kids or something like that? Would that have triggered the right wing in this country, led by the former Solicitor General of the United States, Ken Starr, to embrace this case and to, as they successfully did, brand it as a case to protect students against discussions around drugs in this country? So this case is terrible from a First Amendment point of view.
And also, Alan, there was quite a broad range of legal precedent cited here and constitutional discussion happening all around with the justices. It certainly wasn't a landslide ruling. In fact, it was split 5-4, and it seemed to me even some of the justices voting for the majority did seem a little bit uncomfortable with this case.
Well, I think rightly so, because if this were a case about almost anything else other than drugs, and I want to stress how politicized, how uber-socialized the government has made the issue of drugs. And when we say that, well, what are we really talking about? We live in a country where there are 400,000 pharmaceuticals available today. We live in a country where there are hundreds of varieties of alcohol in the form of wine, beer, and distilled spirits. We live in a country where there are dozens of different ways you can deliver tobacco products into your body. And it's acknowledged that under most circumstances, when these products, all of which are abused, that society and individuals have great concern. But to turn around and essentially criminalize this type of speech is just going to further complicate the court's work in the years to come. What happens when, since so much of this is being done in the schools to protect children, and that because drugs are so vilified and demonized by the federal government, and that it has all these different mechanisms and programs to thwart students from this activity, it doesn't matter that they're not at all successful, just simply the fact that they exist is enough for the government, apparently in this case, to prevail by saying that essentially these students are running up against conventional dogma. Well, what's going to happen in the future when students, say, oppose food that is not vegan? What happens when students come out in favor of sexual freedom rather than sexual abstinence? Or what happens in the future? One can hardly not envision this coming down the path. What happens when students unfurl a banner at a student-sanctioned event that says, hemp can save the world, or hemp can save the forests? Well, by definition, that's a pro-drug statement, even though both statements are in fact true regarding hemp being a very viable plant, a utilitarian plant, probably more so than the soybean, but our government has vilified and criminalized hemp. So what's going to happen in the future when students come out in favor of hemp, logically, rationally, as they should, from a pro-environmental point of view? Are they going to be punished as being advocates for pro-drug speech? The Supreme Court has really opened up a terrible, terrible area of free speech here.
And Alan, we're going to speak with Chris Crane of Students for Sensible Drug Policy in a moment further about the Bong Hits for Jesus banner ruling from the Supreme Court today. But I want to move on with you. You were just in London speaking before the longest-running marijuana reform organization in the world. Alan, tell us about that visit.
In fact, it is. Myself and Dr. Ethan Nadelman attended from the Drug Policy Alliance the 40th anniversary of a group called Release, and they are the oldest drug policy reform group in the world that has been organized for all these years. And so they had a conference in downtown London. They had about 200 people show up. And what I found so notable about it was that they invited many of their original funders and founders to come on out and talk about why they started it in 1967 and what their impressions are all these years later. And the two things I got from most of the speakers was fascinating, was that a certain degree of apology, an apologetic tone to the audience that they'd started something in the 1960s that they thought was going to happen rather soon, the legalization of marijuana. And in London, unlike the United States, there has not been nearly the degree of drug policy reform as compared to here. There is not effectively reform groups like normal. They don't have chapters. They don't have lawyers out there advocating for drug policy reform en masse. They don't have more than a few different groups that up until recently received most of their monies from the government itself, which didn't leave them in a very strong position to challenge the government. So today, a lot of these groups are now swinging more towards private charities and getting money from stakeholders for reform. And it was a fascinating array of people. There was a member from the House of Lords, Lord David Rothbotham, who heads the prisons in England. He came out and essentially said the prisons are a disaster in the United Kingdom, and that largely because of nonviolent offenders, that's of course a code word for drug offenders, are just overpopulating their jails, and that pragmatically speaking, even if he himself is not in favor of people using drugs and is morally opposed to it, it didn't take long for him to observe that you could really improve prisons and rehabilitation if you took people out of prison who should never be there, namely people who use marijuana. Other speakers were from the members of Parliament, members of European Parliament, all getting up there and acknowledging that Britain is way behind the times, mainly compared to other countries in Europe like Spain, the Netherlands, Portugal. All of these places have moved much further, much faster, even though it was in England that much of this revolution of thought and of activity began in the 1960s, but it hasn't really moved forward. And many of the speakers were just very apologetic that it hasn't moved as fast as they wanted. And the other thing that they seem clearly vexed by and intrigued by the American and Canadian situation is how it is that we're able to build community. How is it that we can have podcasts with 15 or 20,000 people a day listening to it? How can we have web pages where 30, 40,000 people a day come to it and download millions of pages of information? How can we have Seattle Hemp Fests and Boston Freedom Rallies drawing hundreds of thousands of stakeholders to come out to a local common and protest? Because this doesn't happen at all in the United Kingdom. So for me, it was sort of fun and fascinating to relate to them how it is that Normal and all these other groups are building community here in America to actually change the laws.
And Alan, there was some reform happening over there in the UK, in London specifically, but it didn't really carry over to the rest of the country.
Well, to some degree, they have changed the scheduling of marijuana, or as they would describe it, the classification of it. And it, to a large degree, one could describe it as slightly decriminalized. But the penalties are still quite enhanced for anybody who gets caught possessing a little bit more than an ounce, for anybody who would try to grow a small amount, even if it's for their own use and not for resale. And medical marijuana is almost off the chart there as compared to the United States. That was another area that they were just marveled that the United States now, one-third more or less of our population in this country lives in a state or municipality where medical marijuana exists. Certainly when New York State comes online, either this year or next year, that will, you know, clearly put a third of the country's population in a medical marijuana state. So they were very keen on trying to understand how to cobble together the coalitions needed just to move medical marijuana forward.
And Alan, you mentioned New York there, so let me also have you weigh in on all the activity happening in New England. We saw Rhode Island's governor veto medical marijuana. Then the legislature in Rhode Island overturned the governor's veto, making their medical marijuana program permanent. That is now law. Then in Connecticut, we saw Governor Jody Rell veto medical marijuana there. That does have the possibility of being overturned in the legislature there. In New York, we've got Governor Spitzer expressing support for medical access. Of course, earlier this year, New Mexico's governor and presidential candidate Bill Richardson fought very hard for medical marijuana access in his state. So, Alan, what is it here? We see governors on both sides of this issue. How do they end up like Governor Rell in Connecticut, almost inexplicably going against their state's interest there and definitely towing the federal line?
I think Governor Richardson was absolutely correct in observing for years the attempts to pass medical marijuana in his state. By the time a bill finally appeared on his desk, it surely would satisfy all constituents that it was a program that was limited in scope, that there wasn't going to be the possibility of redirect sales or anything like that, and that in the end, it was politically pragmatic. It was made perfect sense from a moral point of view. So it is confusing to see how these governors, particularly in New England, want to carry the federal government's water on this. I mean, surely they must have been informed at this point that in their states, their constituents do not support the federal prohibition against medical marijuana. They saw it in their local papers. They heard it on their local radio talk shows. I mean, this was clear as can be. So why would these governors violate Tip O'Neill's maxim that all politics are local? And again, I think it speaks to the uber-politicalization of this topic that, you know, governors and others who would otherwise follow their political compass correctly regarding their constituents' wants, in this case, bizarrely defer to the federal government coming in there and declaring things like, well, you can't do this, or, you know, federal law will overrule you, when other states, since the federal government has been claiming that for the last decade, have already moved forward with that. The fact that while Governor Rell was thinking, gee, should I sign this bill or not, thousands of people per day were buying medical marijuana in California right over the counter, specific and unique only to California. And that other states, like even in New England, Maine and Vermont, are good examples of states that had medical marijuana laws on the books with little or no problems whatsoever. And so it is disgusting on a personal level to see governors defer to this bureaucracy here in Washington, D.C., known as the ONDCP, when they have no logical or politically sane reason to do so.
And it really comes down to broader political interests there on their part, you know, these people sort of being put in their place by the federal officials, I guess.
Well, one imagines, you know, are they looking to the future for a plum on their thumb? Do they want to become, you know, some sort of technocrat or ambassador that will be appointed and that they fear that they will lose that opportunity if they do something genuinely compassionate and pragmatic in carving out these, what I describe as very, very tepid medical marijuana bills?
And just to be clear here, when we say the ONDCP and DEA and federal officials put pressure on state governors to toe that federal prohibition line, you know, Normal has worked to uncover those communications through FOIAs and the like to show that the federal government attempts to directly impact state legislation.
Oh, absolutely. No, there's not a doubt about it. In fact, we've just started to put together the FOIA documents for Rhode Island. For Connecticut. We'd like to find out more about, you know, how many times the federal government lobbied, how many people did they send up to Connecticut, you know, what kind of experts that they dispatch up there, and we want to see their information, and we want to make it publicly available to the citizens in Connecticut and to reformers around the country so that they understand just how pervasive the politics of this are from the federal government.
And filing those FOIAs, or Freedom of Information Act requests, and getting the information, this is another way Normal is advocating for American marijuana consumers and everyone interested in prohibition reform.
Well, it certainly is one of the important things that we do that few, certainly nobody in the media is doing, and that's a shame on them. But even within the 30 groups that are involved with drug policy reform today, we all have the ability and right to ask our government what they're doing in our name and with our dollars, and FOIA, Freedom of Information Acts, are something we all can do as citizens.
Well, Alan, this has been a great discussion today. Thank you for joining us here to talk about London, New England, and also the Bong Hits for Jesus banner case. Have a very good day there in Washington, D.C.
My pleasure. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you again, Alan. Alan St. Pierre is the executive director of Normal in Washington, D.C. Also joining us today to cover the Supreme Court ruling against student Joseph Frederick of Alaska in the Bong Hits for Jesus banner case is Chris Crane. Chris is the director of Students for Sensible Drug Policy in Washington. We spoke with Chris as he and a group of concerned students spoke out on the steps of the Supreme Court as arguments were being heard in this case a few months ago. Chris, welcome back here to the Audio Stash today.
Thanks for having me back.
Chris, it's always great to have you here on the program. Again, listeners can read the full opinions the Supreme Court has posted online at Cornell University's Law School website. We have links to it at normalaudiostash.com. Chris, what did you take away from this 5-4 Supreme Court ruling today?
Well, it's a bit of a mixed bag. We're disappointed that the Supreme Court would curtail students' free speech rights in any way. That said, they actually agreed essentially with the position that SSDP put forth in our amicus brief in this case, which is that students need to have a protected right to discuss issues of drug policy in public schools. And the Supreme Court justices, in their opinions, were pretty clear that they're basically limiting free speech, or essentially giving principals the right to punish students for free speech that expressly promotes drug use. And they went so far as to say that principals would not have the right to punish students for talking about marijuana legalization or the need to end the war on drugs. So in that respect, we're quite pleased with the decision, although we wish they would have just simply upheld the Ninth Court decision outright.
And Chris, do you think some students might get the wrong message here and, you know, perhaps think that their speech on the issue of prohibition reform is restricted?
Well, there's always a fear when the Supreme Court rules on a complicated case like this, and this is quite a complicated decision if you look at just the number of concurring and dissenting opinions that were offered. Anytime the Supreme Court offers a ruling on a complicated case, there's always the concern that, you know, the media coverage of the case is going to be oversimplified and that students will come away with the wrong message. A big example of this would have been, when the Supreme Court ruled in both the Oakland Cannabis Buyers Cooperative case and then the Rach B. Gonzalez case, the media was basically reporting it as if medical marijuana had been overturned when that wasn't the case. So in this case, of course, we are concerned that students will see this and think that they no longer have the right to talk about drug policy reform or drug policy issues in public schools, which is why we're undergoing a serious media outreach effort today, and we'll be doing so for the rest of the week, to make sure that the media understands that the court in no way limited a student's ability to talk about marijuana legalization, the need to end the war on drugs, the efficacy of medical marijuana, and so forth.
And Chris, what does SSDP recommend students do to effectively address these issues and discuss ending prohibition within their school environments?
Well, I think when you're talking about if you're talking about the subject of drug policy reform or marijuana law reform, I don't think students need to change their approach to this in any way. In fact, the court in their ruling today essentially protected their rights to discuss drug policy reform or marijuana law reform. So if anything, I think students should feel emboldened to write research papers or give presentations or bring up for debate the very serious issues of drug policy reform, marijuana law reform, or even challenging schools, the effectiveness of schools' anti-drug policy or student drug testing policies.
So more than anything, high school students, especially those who feel strongly about prohibition reform, can really speak out even more and express themselves even further about these issues today.
I think they absolutely should, and the Supreme Court upheld their right to do so. So it's not only something that they have the right to do, but I feel it's something that they should be doing.
Righto. Well, Chris, thank you very much for taking time to join us here today. I look forward to speaking with you again very soon.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me on, as always, and happy to do it anytime.
Chris Crane is the director of Students for Sensible Drug Policy in Washington, D.C. We'll speak with Chris again on Thursday concerning SSDP's work on the Higher Education Act. And we have links to SSDP's website online. They're located at ssdp.org. We have links to them at normalaudio-stash.com.
Zurückgezogen in mein kleines sicheres Haus. Ich beobachte Tag für Tag aus einer geschützten Position. Und was ich da sehe, das mag ich nicht. Ich glaub es nicht, oh. Du kannst mir erzählen, was du willst, solange du nur eine Seite kennst. Hast du keine Sicherheit, die andere als dein Feind zu nennen. Du musst dir schon die Mühe machen, beide Seiten zu verstehen. Dann kannst du auch ohne Zweifel ein gerechtes Urteil geben. Hast du Zweifel, dann glaub es nicht. Glaub es nur, wenn du sicher bist. Hast du Zweifel, dann glaub es nicht. Glaub es nur, wenn du sicher bist.
Some people say I'm smoking too much dope. as bad to me when I'm smoking too much dope. Well, I think I may be drinking too much wine. But if you leave me for a few with a glass or two, well, I'm sure to change my mind. Off that bottle and start drinking too much wine. Well, the mass ain't nothing but a well-deserved break from your everyday troubled lives. And who wouldn't mind the break now and again when it's so much work just trying to get by? Think I've been drinking too much whiskey. Has been to me. Oh, when you're swimming in a bottle, life seems like some distant sea that you never want to go to when you drink too much whiskey.
Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 420 tomorrow. Podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.